Oh, the horns, go.
In everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the sole place they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you win.
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Nothing we can play against and make his ass quit. That's our framework. That's our MO with the team.
Richardson breaks free on the sideline. Zone.
This is a mauling, folks, a mauling.
Hear the tide, honey badger.
Hello and welcome to the Alabama Football Podcast. Tom, we're back, and this time with a defensive frame of mind. You ready?
Man, I am ready. There's a lot of exciting players to talk about on this defense.
There really are some really good-looking young guys.
Man, this is just the cupboard is full, and they just keep bringing them. It's really good to see these names and these guys getting the recognition like an Adrian Hubbard, because he just kind of flashed onto the scene last year, and now he's sitting here listed as a first-round draft pick in next year's mock draft.
Adrian Hubbard.
start with linebacker, man. Which one do you want to talk about? Adrian, Trey, CJ, or Xavier? I guess you got to start with CJ, right?
You got
to start there.
Yeah, you're throwing me out of my groove starting at linebacker, but I like it. Let's do that. Look, CJ.
Start with the man.
What do you want to know more than CJ Mosley is going to get more reps this season than he's gotten in his career, and he's already considered the best linebacker in college football?
Man, I am just so happy for this Theodore High School graduate that he was able to have a horrific injury against LSU and that he was able to rebound from that injury and have the season that he did last year, and that he can now come in and double his numbers from 2012. You can give the listeners these numbers because we looked at where a Tao was ranked and how many reps he had had versus a CJ. CJ could break some records this year.
No, and one of the biggest frustrations that I had last year around Tao, and look, there was opportunity for several, but one of the biggest frustrations that I got is all the national media. This guy's, he went to New York as part of the Heisman, deal and was a runner-up in the selection. But if you look at his totals and compare them to Mosley, look, he had more interceptions because, a lot of those were just accidental, literally dropped in his hands. And so that's something that they just happen in bulk or they don't. But when you look at the performance that a linebacker can influence, which is tackles and tackles for loss and sacks and those types of effort plays, Mosley was just a hair behind him in every one of those categories. And the number of snaps, he was a part-time, I don't want to say part-time player because he was a little more than that, but he was a part-time starter. He was not a full-time three-down back, three-down linebacker all season long like Tao was. It was a marked difference at their number of reps. And so if you were to prorate them, man, Mosley might have been the most productive linebacker ever. I mean,
CJ Mosley would have been in New York if that was the case because with him and Nico and Trey, you in essence had three guys playing two positions.
And so
for CJ, what is so amazing about this guy is he doesn't appear on the surface to have the build to be able to be as physical as he is. When I look at the guy, I was thinking, okay, this guy is going to be really good in coverage. He's really going to be good against the running back in the flats. He's going to be an edge guy, okay? Well, as he's continued to build some mass and be able to get his nose in there, he's really well-rounded his game. And so for CJ, man, the sky's the limit this year because the only thing that can stop this kid is an injury. And obviously, I hope that he doesn't have another one of those.
Yeah, but I hope he doesn't either. And this is the kind of guy you think, man, what – this guy's different. What's different about this guy? He's won the national title 2 years in a row, was a highly productive linebacker in an Alabama defense, would have been considered by NFL scouts a top 15 draft pick. Why come back?
Man, I'm so glad you asked that, okay? Because we don't know the character of these guys, right? We're not going out to eat dinner with these guys. We don't know these guys on a personal level. But it's fun to guess. And my guess is when him and AJ both said they were coming back, it just told me so much about the two of them. Because like you said, they didn't have to. How many guys would have said, man, I've got my one ring, I'm done. We were able to do that. Or now that he's got his two rings. I think CJ Mosley and AJ McCarron are just high character individuals who come from a really good family, from what I understand, and they bleed Alabama and they want to pass the baton and they want to be able to say that they won three effing national championships in a row when they pass that baton.
Yeah.
And so I love it for the game of college football that these two guys that are seniors came back.
Yes.
And take nothing away from these other guys on this team that I don't know their personal level either. Dude, if I didn't love CJ already, man, the man crush went up the damn barometer when him and AJ said they were coming back.
Look, when you have, and we've seen this, especially under Saban, you know, juniors that have come out and gone early, you know, and Mark and Julio and Darius and Courtney and Dante and, you know, Ingram and, you know, the list of Milliner last year, Kareem Jackson.
Sure.
You know, the list goes on and on. All of those guys, you know, first or early second round. I think Courtney, you know, fell to the second round. All of those guys, none of those guys were begrudged. None of those guys were considered, he needs to come back. If, you know, an Adrian Hubbard, if he had gone last year, he probably, you know, needed to come back. If, you know, Steen had gone last year, he probably needs to come back. But none of those guys were begrudged for leaving early. TJ and AJ would have fallen into that category. Fluker last year is another guy. None of those guys are begrudged for having gone early. And AJ and TJ could fall into that same category, except for they elected to come back, which is just, it's rare in college football anymore, and it's fun, and it's what's good about college football. I liked it when Peyton Manning came back, and I'm not a Tennessee fan. I liked it when he came back for what it represented.
You became a fan when he did that.
So
sure.
I'm not, you know, it's easy to say, well, of course you like it's good for college football when it's good for your team. Okay, I see that point, but I say that about other players too. I say that about, you know, when Tim Duncan in basketball, another sport that I don't even follow that closely, when he came back, that's just good for the game. And when Peyton Manning came back, it's just good for the game. And so when they come back, hey, I'm glad it's my team, but it's good for the game.
Oh, it is. It's very much good for the game. And I will say about CJ, with all this talk about, you know, can they repeat? And they've come out and ranked number one in both polls, and that's great, et cetera. I will say that, you know, if he wanted the spotlight on him, if it wasn't already bright, and if he wanted, you know, to carry the weight on his shoulders, he will. Because if he was not coming back with the losses up front of Damian Square, with the losses up front of Jesse Williams.
Yep.
If he was not coming back on this year's team, this defense would look very different if he was not in the center of it.
You know, it really would. He is the centerpiece. You know, people like to call him the quarterback of the defense. You know, middle linebackers have always been called that. So, you know, I'm not going to buck the trend of, you know, kind of football lore. I don't know that I would call him the quarterback as much as I would call him the centerpiece of this defense, literally the middle linebacker, you know. But I just think what he brings to the table, his versatility. We're going to play, I think it's six or seven kind of hurry up, no huddle style teams. He is the prototypical linebacker to defend against that.
He's the killer. He's the killer for that. He absolutely is.
No doubt about it. You know, I just think it's phenomenal, and I'm excited to, you know, we could go on about Mosley. I think we're very clear. This is the guy. This is the guy. We love this guy. He's an all-timer. He's going to go down as an all-time favorite. I don't think we can say much more high expectations are high, and that's not a bad thing for this guy. It's just, we just think, you know, it's not that we're dependent upon him to succeed, or we're putting outrageous, unfair expectations on this guy. It's just this guy is so good, and he's demonstrated how good he is in the past that I just literally, the sky is the limit what he can do for us this year.
Oh, it is. And speaking of sky is the limit, there's a couple other guys that I think is interesting. You know, I want to put Adrian Hubbard to the side for a quick second. And I know Adrian Hubbard is getting a lot of pub, okay? And Adrian Hubbard kind of came on at the end of the year. But I think the guys that are really going to start taking that torch are going to be Xavier Dixon and Denzel Duvall. And what's crazy for Duvall is he can't even get on the field because of Dixon and Hubbard.
Well, Denzel Duvall is starting to run with the ones. And so, I think Xavier had a little bit of a procedure coming out of spring that was kept a very low profile. Denzel starting to run with the ones. And this is a guy that I want more Denzel Duvall. He's another guy. I can't get enough Denzel Duvall. There's he wears number 30. So, and I've said this before, he reminds me of a young Hightower. I can't help it. He wears number 30 and he reminds me of a young Hightower. This guy, I read the recruiting thing, and he was between us and maybe LSU, but A&M, he's from Texas. And one of the things, and I read this line from his high school coach, and I was like, I want this guy on my team. You know, his high school coach said he's a violent tackler. I love that. I want one of those. Well, and we have him, and now he's going to be in the starting lineup. This is a guy I want more and more of.
I definitely agree with you that Denzel Duvall is somebody that we want to see on the field more. And I think the way you might see that is I think we might see Xavier Dixon playing some at defensive end. Because Jeffrey Pagan, not to jump to defensive end for a second, I'm just going to say that I think the losses that we had with Damian Square and Quentin Dial cannot be overlooked. And I think there's going to get a point in time this season where they're going to say we can't keep Duvall off the field, and so we're going to move Dixon to defensive end to do so.
Yeah, it's, you know, Dixon's in one of those precarious positions where
great player. But
great player.
They both need to be on the field.
Great player, multi-year starter, but he's getting passed. And it's like, you know, it's like I'm running as fast as I can and dude's passing me. He's going to win the race. You know, it's kind of like Xavier Dixon is a multi-year starter for Alabama defenses.
Well,
and he's going to be passed.
Well, not to jump. We'll do this on defensive line in a second. I'm just going to say that I like having Xavier Dixon in the rotation defensive end with a Stinson and a Pagan. Remember last year when Pagan came in and he would spell Damian Square or Stinson? Right now, that has to be a Fanning or a Tomlinson possibly. Mm-hmm. And I want Dixon to be in that mix. That's all I'm saying. So I think you're going to get your wish, and I think Duvall is probably going to get more reps at the jack position.
Yeah, I completely agree. And Xavier Dixon is going to get his reps. It's going to be at the expense of, you know, of somebody. You know, maybe he becomes a rabbit rusher, or maybe he has some opportunity. I agree that maybe he does step in at the end. And Duvall, I think, can get some reps on the inside. I think Trey DePriest is a player that you know, when we sort of average out whose reps kind of, you know, go up and go down and where do they distribute, I think Trey DePriest is a guy that, now he's suspended now and has a chance to come back. Don't know exactly. There's rumor and speculation that I won't, you know, trade in. But, you know, he's going to be out for a little bit, and he's going to come back. And I don't think he's going to lose his place necessarily in the pecking order for his behavior. I think it's going to be for his play. And he's dropped about 10 pounds to be a little lighter against some of these defenses. And he's a guy who has come in and played since his freshman season. So he's a contributor. He's a veteran of the defense. And I think he's going to be, and our listeners that follow us will know what I mean when I say this, I think he's going to be Nico'd. Now, Nico has a chance to be a starting linebacker who's going to get the least run. And I think Duvall, when it comes to Duvall getting reps, He's going to take some from Xavier. And when we say we've got to get Xavier on the field, I think we slide him over, and I think DePriest sits.
I agree 100% because he does not play in space. That is not his comfort level. Okay. And rushing on the edge is not his comfort level. And so when CJ's in and we're in the nickel and CJ's dropping back in the middle, right? Who are you going to want to have on the edge? You're going to want to have Dixon, Hubbard, or Duvall, right? You're going to want to have two of those three, and it's not going to be Trey. I agree. Right.
Well, think about when we do play four linebacker and we walk two of them up, and maybe one of them's Xavier and one of them's Hubbard, and we walk them up to ends. And so we're playing, you know, we're playing a
five-man front. Yeah.
Yeah, we're playing a five-man front or even a four-man front because we're in nickel or dime. And so we're really playing four linebackers and two down linemen, but they're both nose guard types. And we're playing defensive end with two outside linebackers. And then we've got CJ and Duvall actually as the middle linebackers who could both be star outside linebackers. And so we've got two nose guards and four outside linebackers.
Oh, sure. And Trey's experience.
And a nickel on top of that. And a nickel on top of that. Now,
oh, sure.
You know, the million-dollar question is how do you slow down this hurry-up, no-huddle, and this mobile quarterback? Well, damn, that's a pretty good way. This gives me a nickel with four outside linebackers.
Well, I think Trey's experience, if he can stay healthy, is going to win out over Duvall in some of those situations. If you've got, and that's why I said it's going to be the Dixon, Hubbard, Duvall combination and two of those three who have been walked up to the edge. Because
yeah.
I think Duvall on the edge is a powerful thing. Remember how with Dante, right, they'd work him and they'd bring him off the edge or bring him up the middle or whatever?
Yep.
Trey DePriest is never going to be that role. And so if a LaMichael Fanning or a Dalvin Tomlinson just tears it up and keeps a Dixon from sliding down, then that's going to hurt a Duvall. But if a Dixon can slide down at defensive end because we need those reps and we need that depth, then Duvall is going to slide into one of those outside linebacker positions.
No, that's fair. I think the rotation there is going to be phenomenal to watch. And we're going to talk defensive line, but we're just talking right now just about linebackers. And we're just talking about five guys. We're not, six guys, five guys. I'm looking at my, we're talking about five. We're talking about four guys. We haven't talked about Adrian Hubbard yet. We haven't talked about Ryan Anderson. We haven't talked about Reuben Foster and Dylan Lee and Reggie Ragland. We're talking about being multiple on defense. And Tommy, we've only mentioned four linebackers.
No, I'm with you, man. Let's go to Adrian Hubbard because I think Adrian Hubbard really took off at the end of the year.
Yes.
And for Nick Saban to be able to bring this guy along like he did last year, this guy has the ability to be someone special.
Yes.
Because of his long arms, his 6'6" frame, his ability to keep guys off of his body at the point of attack. I mean, he led the team with 7 sacks. And I'm sitting here trying to think, oh gosh, when did he do those? Because he just kind of does them quietly.
And so
this guy could have 10 sacks this year without a blink of an eye.
I wrote down he could double his sack production. So 10 splits the difference. 10, double-digit sacks is phenomenal. You know, he could get 10 to 12 to 14 sacks, and I would not be surprised. I would not be surprised. His talent, I think we talked about this after A-Day, that this is a guy that has the opportunity to be, and it's a cliche. He can be as good as he wants to be. Okay, whatever. No, this guy has the skills, the body, the frame. You can't just will yourself to 6'7" or 6'6".
Right.
He is that. You can't be that tall and that athletic. You know, some tall guys are clumsy. It's, you have to have some of that. God says, you're going to be different. And Adrian Hubbard is one of those guys. He's one of those guys that, he can carry 250 and he can be 6'6" and he can be athletic and he can be nimble and he can keep people off of his body and he can make plays and he can literally be just a amongst all of the other guys and for all the herald that he is getting, he can be better than that. I mean, he can get 12 to 15 sacks on the defense, be a difference maker amongst, maybe a defense full of difference makers, but he can be a star. He can be a top. I mean, look, I want to say top five, but I don't want to oversell. He can be a top 10 draft pick next year.
He is predicted in the first round, okay? This guy in the second scrimmage today had three sacks. He had three sacks today.
Yeah. And so, I know, look, and that's my point.
I know it's just a scrimmage.
I know, still, you touch the quarterback. Three sacks. It's they're cheap sacks. Yeah. I get that in sure. a scrimmage. But, there's three of them. And I'm just saying, if two of them were truly legitimate, right? Let's just, let's yes. discount. If two of them were truly legitimate, that in a you have to tackle them to get the sack game, well, okay, that's cool. So that tells me he can average one a week.
Yes.
Right?
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Hey, let's talk about some of these guys real quick before we jump off this position that no one else remembers. Because I think it's funny with a Duvall that Duvall was the lowest ranked prospect of the four main linebackers in that 2012 class. It was Denzel Duvall. It was Ryan Anderson. It was Dylan Lee. Mm-hmm. And it was Reggie Ragland.
Oh, that's interesting.
And Denzel Duvall was the fourth of those guys. Okay. And so I got to talk a little bit about, I am so intrigued to see what happens with Ryan Anderson. Because in last year's shows, I was chomping at the bit to say, what is Ryan Anderson going to do? Ryan Anderson is going to blow up. This guy is a beast. He is 6'2", 255. Well, he didn't see the field, and he got redshirted.
Yeah, for all of our talk on Denzel Duvall, and I love the guy, and he's going to be a star, and we've said that, Ryan Anderson was the one who looked the most, how they look and how they play.
The most ready. Yes. Two
different things, but he's the one that looked like, wow, he's a true freshman. He looks like, he is ready to go. And he's the guy that I thought would be the first to contribute. And I don't know why. I don't know the story. I know Saban is a complex defense, and so I'm not saying the guy couldn't pick it up, but I just, there's, what are the breadcrumbs that I see here? He looked the most ready, but did not play. I don't know. Maybe there were some of the formations that, he didn't pick up enough of the formations. I don't know. But he's a guy that I look forward to contributing this year. Dylan Lee got on the field. He's the one that I thought was most assured to redshirt, and he was one of the first ones. He literally, I think, was of those four, the first one off the field.
Ryan Anderson is my Chris Black on the offense.
Well,
I think Ryan Anderson has something to prove, and I can't wait to see what he does.
Yeah, and those guys share some history, so that's interesting. Ryan Anderson is the reason Chris Black didn't play.
But Ryan Anderson out of Daphne High School, who played with TJ Yeldon, was the sixth outside linebacker coming out of high school at his position.
Yeah.
And he brought the frame. And so I just wanted to mention him real quick because I really look forward to him. And what's so exciting is we talk about a Hubbard, and we talk about the veteran CJ, and we talk about Denzel Duvall, and we talk about Xavier Dixon, and now we talk about Ryan Anderson. We haven't even talked about Reuben Foster. Are you freaking kidding me? It's like the rich gets richer, man. This is the time to be an Alabama fan.
No,
the beast of all freaking beasts we haven't even talked about yet.
And Reuben Foster is the poster, for the phenomena that I kind of want to spell out. Typically, when you see a college team go on a run, it's the result of a coach coming in and having one and maybe two recruiting classes back to back that really hit. And then as those recruiting classes play through, the hit is over.
Yes.
And so, our hit was Cody and Julio and Ingram and Upshaw and Dante and Darius and, you know, God, you know, all of those other guys. The 2008 recruiting class, we had a whole write-up.
That was supposed to be our hit, 2008.
Yeah, 2008, yes. And it was a hit, right? And so there's a whole write-up on our website you can go look at and amaze yourself with, you know, 2008, was it the best recruiting class in the history of ever? And so there's a fantastic report that you can look at and, you know, kind of draw your own conclusion. And so you think, okay, they've had their recruiting class. Now as that class sort of matriculates through, you know, their time will pass. Well, you tell that to these guys.
Oh, my gosh, man. This is such a great time to be a Bama fan. And for a Reuben Foster with all the Alabama and Auburn and the flip and the commitment and all that, that we'll never know the true story. What I am so excited about with this kid is that he came to Alabama with the talent that he read on the depth chart. I don't know the guy. I don't know him personally. I don't know how he's going to pan out. But he came to Alabama knowing that a Denzel Duvall and a C.J. Mosley and an Adrian Hubbard and a Xavier Dixon and a Ryan Anderson was here. And he said, I don't give a shit. I'm Reuben Foster.
Right, right.
That's what impresses me about this kid is he came here with who we've already got here.
And there's something about Saban, and there's something about, you know, and even the commentators, you know, kind of back when the 2008 team sort of outperformed all expectations. I think we were 7-6 in 07. In 2008, you know, we were a couple of plays away from beating Florida and going to the national title. And so that team kind of outplayed, and that was the Julio, and that was the Ingram, and that was, you know, that was that team. And I remember, you know, we played Clemson and beat Clemson. And I remember walking out of that game, and I told my wife, I said, you know, I don't know what our record's going to be, but this is going to be a damn fun team to watch because there's so many youngsters that just want to play and want to compete and want to perform. And there's something about the way Saban recruits, and I don't know what it is, that convinces these guys, look, because everyone's recruiting using our own depth chart against us, right?
Yes.
I mean, everybody is. That's how I would recruit against us. I mean,
sure.
You know, and so there's something about the way Saban talks to these guys that says, yeah, there's guys in front of you. I can guarantee you an opportunity to compete. And I can show you years past freshmen who have earned their opportunity. So are you as good as they are? I don't know. Right?
I'm with you, man.
I heard this story and it's like, you know, the military recruiters were giving us, you know, they each had their opportunity to give their speech at a high school gymnasium sort of auditorium. And so the Navy guy went up there and gave his, you know, and they each had like, you know, 12 minutes, right? Because, you know, Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines. And so it's an hour assembly. So they each have their few minutes. And so the Navy guy, you know, he had 12 minutes, but he went 15. Army guy wasn't going to be outdone, so he went a little bit longer. And the Air Force guy get up there and he went a little bit longer. And so by the very end, the Marine recruiter had like, you know, a minute. And so he got up to the podium. And he looked across the audience. He looked across all the high school students. And he said, yep, there might be two people in here that can be Marines. And then went and sat down. And he had the longest line of people wanting to come talk to him after the assembly. And it's like, that's what Saban does. And it's like, yeah, I don't know. There might just be a call. Yeah, you might get a few snaps. But come and find out. You might be a star.
And no, that is,
it's just
that is
there's
true.
Something about how he pitches it and sells it that is just, it's like catnip to these guys.
Just the competition, man. Just the but Reuben Foster, I'm looking forward to seeing how he can crack in to this situation. Because we do run a scheme that is not typical. We do run a scheme that's two linebackers sometimes. It's three linebackers sometimes. It's four linebackers sometimes with two walking up on the edges. And so I don't know how much a Reuben Foster cracks into this lineup. And so in a perfect world, and as crazy as it sounds, I wish he would be redshirted. Well, but I don't think you're going to be able to keep him off the field.
And he's not going to be redshirted. And there's a couple, you know, sort of like points I want to string together here. One of my favorite things that I've heard so far about Reuven Foster is like the line from Anthony Steen's dad. And so, you know, Anthony Steen's a fifth-year guy, and his dad has been to, you know, 100 practices and seen, you know, hundreds of, you know, college football players and NFL talent. And so he goes to the first practice and sees Reuven Foster and says, that dude looks like he's a 30-year-old man, you know. And so that's not his, you know, Anthony Steen's father, that's not his first rodeo. That's not his first rodeo. He's seen good-looking athletes. And right. so to say that about Reuven Foster, I think is pretty impressive. And so that's kind of one point. You know, another point is Saban, he runs a very complex defense. You know, that's not understated. But one of the genius, you know, one of the genius components that I've observed is the way he's able to compartmentalize pieces of it. And so Geno Smith was a true freshman last year and said, look, all you got to do is learn to play star. We'll figure out the rest of it. You learn to play star. And then you can be a contributor. Well, you know, we won the title in 2009 with Eric Anders as our starting rabbit rusher.
Right.
Do you think Reuven Foster's maybe a better rabbit rusher? I don't know. I mean, Jarrell Harris couldn't find the field. Reuven Foster, I think, is he going to be another Jarrell Harris? Or can he contribute? And you say, right now, all you got to learn is rabbit rusher. And we think we're going to play a lot more of that this season.
Well, and to your point, right, if he's able to do something like a rabbit rusher and you can sit there and interchangeably work a Hubbard and a Dixon and a Reuven Foster into those kind of roles, oh, my gosh. It's just, you know, it's a fun thing to think about. Hey, let's jump over to the defensive line for a second. I think we lost some big players in Damian Square and Quentin Dial. I think Quentin Dial was a guy that was just, you know, he provided that depth that you and I have seen in the past that is so important to set the edge. And now a Jeffrey Pagan, you know, was asked to come in and play 10, 12, 15 snaps a game, and he showed good flashes. And now he's had to go opposite of Stinson and assume that role of Square and Dial. And, you know, I'm very excited about him and Pagan, or Stinson and Pagan. But
I want to say this.
I got some question marks behind those two guys. Sure.
Well, I want to say this about Pagan. One of the things that was really, really fun last year to watch about Pagan, because I think you were the kind of the first on, at least between the two of us, you were the first on this guy. You know, number eight, which is fun to watch. Number eight is a 300-pound, you know, 270-pound, 80-pound guy. But you're like, this dude flashes. And about the time we started talking about him, he started getting more reps, and he started playing more and more and earlier, and into the second quarter, into the first quarter. And dude, you know, he's on the first drive, you know, he's on the first, he didn't start, but he was on, you know, on the first defensive drive. And so his reps, you know, he didn't get like 12 reps a game all season. He started with that and then ended up with significantly more. So he's a guy that I'm very excited about. A full-time starter and the contribution that he's going to bring to the team. The biggest question, and there's a ton of guys that we can talk about, but the biggest question I have is who's going to take over the nose spot? You know, we've had a run of Cody and Chapman and Jesse Williams. And so, you know, Brandon Ivory's kind of next up. You know, I just scanned a practice report coming out of the scrimmage, and it looks like he twisted a knee. I know nothing more than that in terms of, you know, is it a couple days, is it a couple week kind of situation? I don't know. His body transformation in his 3 years has been phenomenal, and he at spots contributed last year. We need him to string that together if he can or if he can't. What do you think about the nose, Ivory, and or other guys?
I do not see Brandon Ivory being that guy. I see Brandon Ivory fighting for a backup position. Brandon Ivory had some flashes last year, but when you look at the players of Josh Chapman and Jesse Williams and what they have brought to that nose guard position and taking on the double teams, I just don't think Brandon Ivory is that guy. Is Brandon Ivory a good player? Yes, he is. Could Brandon Ivory start for a lot of SEC schools? Yes, he could. is Brian Ivory going to be able to assume the role that are a stand, kind of like you said, with center, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Can Ryan Kelly assume the role of Barrett Jones? Yes. Can he be a Barrett Jones? No. Can Brandon Ivory assume the role? Yes. Would there be a noticeable drop-off? Yes. And so I remember in the SEC championship game against Georgia, when Jesse Williams got hurt and Jesse Williams came out of the game, and I pointed to my wife, him sitting on the bench, and Brandon Ivory came in the game, and Brandon Ivory was healthy, and Georgia ran the ball up the middle for the next three or four plays and ran it down our throat.
Now, Ivory was a little banged up there.
Okay. You know, okay. It wasn't the same thing. The defense in the middle was not the same.
I agree with that.
And so, in my opinion, either A, we're going to see a Jeffrey Pagan flash in the middle, which we saw last year because Brandon Ivory wasn't ready. And so when Jesse Williams came out, Pagan stepped down into the nose guard as a sophomore, and we brought somebody else on the edge. Either I see Pagan moving to nose guard full time and Xavier Dixon taking that defensive end position, or I see a Dalvin Tomlinson, who I've heard good things about, or an A'shaun Robinson, who I've heard things good things about, being that person. But I don't. Brandon Ivory is going to go from being a backup last year to a backup this year, in my opinion.
I think I get to where you are a little different route. I think Ivory's a quality player. I don't think he's a frontline guy. I think Kervin, I look forward to seeing some Kervin this year. He's kind of he was a young 17-year-old as a player last year and redshirted, and so I look forward to seeing him a year in the system. You know, his body type seems to have transitioned or transformed. You know, Darren Lake, I think a second year in the system, I think has the opportunity to contribute. What I think we're going to see out of the nose is a committee. I don't think we're going to see a lead guy and then a backup guy. And so similar to how we talked about tight end with a Vogler, you know, where Vogler was really good next to a Michael Williams, but someone next to a Vogler isn't the same thing. And so maybe Vogler's a better Chachi than he is a Fonzie. And so maybe Brandon Ivory is a good Chachi, but he's not a good Fonzie. And that's, you know, he's a good second guy, but not the good first guy. And so maybe that's what we're going to see there. And so I think we have an opportunity to see a committee. And so we're going to have three or four Chachis that are going to, you know, play okay, but none of them is going to be the lead dog. I think the guy that has the sort of, you know, the biggest, and I've not seen him play against live action, so we'll have to see this. But gosh, when I see pictures of A'shaun Robinson, I look at him and the way that I've looked at some of these other guys in the past, and I've said, that's the guy. That's the guy. And so I think A'shaun is the guy that's going to, hey, let me have my shot and then try to get me off the field once I'm out there. Now, I think we'll see Ivory and we'll see Kervin and we'll see Lake and we'll see Dalvin as an inside rabbit rusher because he's really good, a little bit lighter than some of these other guys, but really quick for a man of his size. I think we'll see all of them, and we might we've talked about some of the formations with the outside linebackers and trying to be more flexible, but we still want some girth inside. We might see two defensive tackles and two outside linebackers. You know, not two defensive ends, not a true four-man front in terms of four down linemen, but maybe two down linemen that are tackles and two walk up hand on the ground outside linebackers. I think we might see that kind of action, but I think it'll come from this group of A'shaun, Ivory, Kervin, Lake, and Dalvin.
I see what you're saying there, and I will tell you that I do see the possibility for a committee. The one thing that makes me nervous about Pagan is that when he signed, he was 272, and now he's 290, and if he carries more weight, he's not going to be as effective. And Xavier Dixon came in at 238, and he's now 265. I only point that out because Saban wants guys on the edge that are 280 to 290, 300 pounds. So maybe Dixon doesn't make it to defensive end, and maybe Pagan doesn't make it to nose guard except on pass rush situations. And so going back to your A'shaun Robinson, I will tell you that I think A'shaun Robinson is the biggest signee or commitment that we had in last year's class.
Ooh, that's a big statement.
And the reason I say that is because this kid was the number two player out of Texas. This kid, you know, had Oklahoma and Texas and USC and all these big boys, LSU, in his ear. But at 6'4", 320 pounds, he brings the athleticism with the girth that a Jesse Williams had. Just what Jesse Williams was 6'4", 330. He brings what Josh Chapman had. And so I will tell you, take nothing away from these Curvin and all these other guys, but they just don't bring the size. So I'm just going to say real quick is that it's too early to tell because he's a true freshman, but I hope that what we're hearing in these 19 practices comes to fruition with Robinson.
Yeah, I do too. And if you even look at just a picture of him, and I get it's a still, and you know a still doesn't play, but he carries his weight better than any of those guys. I mean, for as good as Cody was, he didn't carry his weight well. And for, you know, Chapman and even, you know, even Jesse Williams last year, he looked like an apple. I mean, on stilts, you know, he had skinny legs, but a huge upper body. And so there were times I thought, how does he play as well as he does? Because he just looks funny. And hope he doesn't hear me say that. But Ashawn's weight is distributed. I mean, if you were to craft, you know, an interior defensive lineman, you know, maybe more of a defensive tackle than an NFL defensive tackle versus a nose guard, but an NFL defensive tackle I will take as my collegiate nose guard. He just looks handcrafted in weight distribution proportions to fit that role. And so he's why I look at that guy and I point to him and I say, he's the guy. But I think all of these guys will get some reps. And I think there will be something demoralizing to a defensive and offensive interior line when we're able to run a fresh person out there for 3 and 4 and 5 series in a row. You haven't seen the same guy twice, and they're all big and talented and athletic.
No, that's true. And I will tell you real quick, just go into Dalvon Tomlinson for a second. I'm really excited about this kid. And he's listed at you know, defensive end by some people. I would love nothing more than a Brandon Ivory to be able to be the guy and bring and let Ashawn Robinson spell him with Darren Lake as well, right? Because you would have three guys that are 6'3", 6'4", over 320 pounds. Mm-hmm. I'd love those to be the three guys so that a Dalvon Tomlinson can play on the edge. Because I think he can be a really excited player in space.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it's just going to be interesting how we mix these guys up. I honestly think, and I'm repeating myself, I honestly think we're going to see some unique formations and some unique you know, variations. I think we're going to see two defensive tackles and, you know, be it ends or I think outside linebacker. I just think we're going to do – we have this mix of talent that now we can be creative with them. And I think that we're going to see some things that just, oh, that's a personnel grouping that we haven't seen before. And again, it goes back to...
We've never been able to do it before, by the way. What you're saying is correct. When we had Cody, when we had Chapman, when we had Jesse Williams last year because Brandon Ivory wasn't ready, we didn't have that.
No, we didn't. And what's amazing, and, you know, and I can't, you know, it's like, if I'm dreaming, don't pinch me. Because I'm enjoying this dream.
Sure.
But look, we should be at the end of our run, right? I mean, you know, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm just saying, we've watched college football for a long time. We should be at the end of our run. And we're seeing things on our roster. And we're seeing it, you know, look, Tommy, we haven't named all the names at defensive line. This is the most talented group of defensive linemen I've ever seen. We've talked about that at wide receiver. You know, we've talked, you know, we can name that at other positions. And the opportunity for that we have to be multiple at these different positions at, you know, 4 or 5 seasons into this amazing run. And we're seeing things, athletic young guys, an opportunity to be multiple in a way that we've never seen at our college. Sure. Those two things don't make sense together.
No, not at all.
They don't both coexist.
But yet, that's why you and I enjoy watching A-Day games so much, right? How exciting are A-Day games now in the third and fourth quarter when the Denzel Duvalls are stepping in and we're watching these guys and we see what's going to come down the pike.
That's why I love these games, you know, against a, you know,
Western Carolina or whatever.
Western Carolina and a Georgia State and whatever. Because we get to see these young guys in extended roles and extended opportunities that allow us to really see what can they be? What opportunities could they really, you know, demonstrate and grow into over their career?
Oh, sure. Absolutely, man. It's like Gary Danielson said real quick, guys, for all the listeners.
Yes.
Gary Danielson made the comment, you know, a year ago before the LSU National Championship game that he came down to watch us play or came down to watch practice as he was, you know, getting ready for the LSU-Alabama game in the regular season. And he sat there and did an interview on Saturday before the game. And he said, guys, he said, Alabama's got years to come. He said, I've got to go to practice. He said, I didn't just see the starters. He said, I got to see all the other guys.
Yep.
He said, I got to see the guys that y'all have no idea who they are yet, but you will.
Yep.
And guess who they were? They were Denzel Duvall. They were Xavier Dixon. They were Adrian Hubbard, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Hey, let's talk about defensive backs, man. Let's start with the star position.
Just real quick, I don't want to skip the defensive line position without just mentioning Jonathan Allen, who's listed as a DL/linebacker. He's a guy that's going to see some play. He's a guy that looks like, you know, he's a, you know, a junior in the system. He's a true freshman. D-liner is another guy who looks like, you know, he could be a defensive tackle type with some speed and some burst. And
good upside.
He's a true freshman. And so when I talk about this may be as deep as we've had at this position, I am counting those guys, and I suspect that we'll see them play. I suspect most of these defensive linemen will play. Tim Williams, who's also a freshman, probably, I mean, he looks, you know, like a freshman you would think a freshman would look, right? And so he's a guy that I think will grow into his body, and he will become a star. He's probably the one who redshirts. You know, I don't know that, but that would be my guess. I look at these guys, and I think, man, we're just going to bring wave after wave after wave, and they each bring something a little bit different that allows us to be so varied, even just across, you know, a staid defensive line.
Oh, sure. And real quick before we jump to DBs, let's just talk about LaMichael Fanning. I mean, you know, he experimented with tight end. He just got moved back to defensive end. But at 6'7", 270, he brings an element to the defensive end position at 6'7" that nobody else does.
If this
light turns on for this guy, this guy could really be the next player to splash that nobody knows about.
This dude is 6'7", 270, has a six pack. I mean, literally, not in his cooler, like literally, dude is cut. To be as big and as heavy as he is ripped. And so, you know, in the preseason guide, I said, look, if he's, you know, at the time he was a tight end, if he's a, you know, defensive end, you know, whatever he is, when he decides, kind of like when the light clicks for him.
Yes.
You know, it's over. I mean, it's over for the competition, you know, kind of within the roster for the starting opportunity and for whoever he has to go against, like literally on the field against the other team. If it's tight end, you know, when the light clicks, you know, it's like musical chairs. Wherever he is, like when the light clicks for him, it's over.
Oh, I think it's going to be like Adrian Hubbard.
I think
we're going to look back to him like we're doing Adrian Hubbard and say, where did he come from?
He's just going to come in. Yeah, I agree. The trick is there's a greater opportunity for this guy for it not to click.
Oh, sure. No, and that's true.
There's something about this guy that he can be it at the position where it clicks for him. I just don't know if it clicks for him. And what I will say is now he's at a little bit of a disadvantage because he went to tight end and missed a lot of camp at defensive end. And about the time that he's you know, playing at tight end is when these young guys really start to come into their own in fall camp. And so now is he playing catch up with some of these younger guys at defensive end?
I think for the depth chart, because we lost Dial and because we lost Damian Square and because Jeffrey Pagan is taking on the starter role, I guess what I'm saying is in our two deep, we lost two of those guys. And so I think the opportunity for Fanning is now. This is his opportunity.
If it's not now, it's probably not going to happen.
It's not going to happen if it doesn't happen this year.
If it doesn't happen this season, then we're talking a day about him being a potential transfer.
No, I'm with you there.
Okay.
Hey, let's talk about the DB thing, man. What the heck is this star position again? Seems like a pretty important position.
I think it's critical. I think it is critical. And I've said this coming out of A-Day, and I spent some time in the preseason guide talking about this. And so, look, I'm gonna put it to you this
way. For those of us that have not heard us before, man, break it down for us.
The star, look, we play a lot of nickel coverage, which is five defensive backs, and we'll play some dime, which is six defensive backs. And so, in Saban's nomenclature, the fifth defensive back is the star. And so that's just his name for that position. And the sixth defensive back, when we go to a dime, he calls the money. And so we play. Now, Saban will call our base defense the 3-4. And so that's, three down linemen, four linebackers, and then four defensive backs. But we play a hell of a lot of nickel. And so, Tommy, you and I call, we call the nickel.
Oh, nickel's our base.
We call that our base, right? The 3-2-5 really is
absolutely
what it is. And so we call that our base. And then there's some variation up front, but really the five DBs. And so the nickelback or the star, we have the most success and the most versatility when we can play a corner type defender, a corner DB at that versus a safety. And so last year's a prime example. I love Vinny Sanceri, but when he was forced to play star, and he's a strong safety, and really he's a converted high school linebacker, he was not able to cover like an SEC corner. And so we lost some of our capability on our defense. When we can play a cornerback at the nickelback, at the star position, we're so much better. And so look at a Javi. Look at a Daquan Menzie. Look at, Milliner played some there last year. And after the A&M game, when we did not have enough cornerbacks and star position players and couldn't cover receivers across the field, we moved Geno Smith, a true freshman, and he played just about every darn snap the whole rest of the season at the star position. And by the end of the season, was a pretty good player. And so the question becomes, we can find two safeties. Between HaHa and between Collins and between Nick Perry and Jarek and Vinny and all of those guys, we can find two SEC caliber safeties. The challenge is, can we find three SEC caliber cornerbacks? And so that is the hinge point of our defense. If we can find two cornerbacks that, Blue is one of them, Deion Blue is one of them. If we can find someone that is not Geno Smith to play opposite Blue at the other corner and free Geno up to play the star, then we're golden.
Man, let me touch on this for a second.
Sure.
Because this is why I think Nick Saban has had the success that he has had at Alabama. Because when he came to the SEC championship game in 2009 against Florida, and I went to that coach's luncheon, and I got a chance to ask him a question. The question was, how lucky are you to be able to have three starting corners to play against these receivers in the SEC? And I think this is what other SEC teams have not figured out. And he has. Because he has got that third corner that can cover that slot guy and can lock down that slot receiver who is smaller in stature and nimble and quick and running the slant routes. And so the fact that Geno had to have so much action at the star last year, I would love nothing more for him to stay at that position. I am very encouraged okay, by John Fulton. So when you talk about what the hinge pin is here, it's John Fulton and that toe turf.
Well, and I don't disagree with you. What I will say, and I'll give a little bit of props here, because I remember, and I'll be honest with you, I can't remember the three cornerbacks. You know, you probably can, but I remember you being ahead of the discussion on that. I remember you thinking, you have three cornerbacks, and I was like, yeah, that's cool, but you know, that wasn't my focal point. But that has changed since I've watched the DBs a little more. So I, you know, tip of the hat to you kind of picking that out. And that was back in 2007, right? That was a long time ago. And so, you know, and so I wanted to get that out there. But I completely agree. You know, we know that we have Geno, and we know that what he can be at the star. And we know that we have Blue, and we think that he can be so much even better than he was, you know, last season. And so is it John Fulton? You know, coming off the injury, he was looking really good at points, you know, last year.
He looked really good against George in the SC Championship
game. He did. And if it's not Fulton, then who really is it? I mean, we moved DeHart and Cyrus Jones over from offensive positions to have an opportunity there. Cyrus looks like he's gonna stick. But, you know, is he the guy that can truly play, you know, starting cornerback in the SEC? Brandon Silvey, or, you know, Bradley Silvey is coming on.
Converted wide receiver. I think to your point real quick, with John Fulton coming back from that turf toe injury, Nick Saban did not have that question answered, right? And that's why he went out and got Travell Dixon when he did, right? And that's why he signed Eddie Williams as a 5-star out of Florida that didn't pan out. And so, to your point, we've moved to Brad Silvey. We've moved to Cyrus Jones. We had moved to Eddie Williams. We had signed to Travell Dixon. Saban knows how important this third cornerback is.
Yes.
And John Fulton has got to be the guy, because Brad Silvey and Cyrus Jones, in my opinion, are not the guys.
Here's where it's critical. If John Fulton is not the guy, then and so here's how do the dominoes fall. If John Fulton's not the guy, then, you know, Geno will move from
back to corner,
from star back to corner. Because sure. Look, we have to have the foundation of the defense.
Yes.
Right? We can have a star and we can be all flexible, but if we're getting beat on 9 routes all day, what's it matter? So we have to have the foundation, right? We have to build a foundation in the defense before we can be multiple on the defense. And so if Fulton can't do it at the corner, then we have to move Geno back to the corner. Then the most likely next guy to play the star is Vinny again. And look, I'm not mad at the guy. He just doesn't have the skills for that position relative to what we need at that position.
I'm going to tell you that when Geno came in, his measurables were 5'11", 180, ran a 4.5 40. Landon Collins was 6 foot, 200, ran a 4.4. I'm going to tell you, if John Fulton is banged up and if John Fulton can't play at the level that, because we hope Ballou moves over, right, where Milner was. Ballou started coming on at the end of the year.
Oh, yeah.
Ballou started making those plays. Because I guess we need to get in here real quick that we had heard last year coming out of summer camp that Ballou was the best cover corner on the team.
Yes.
And so take nothing away from Milner, but Ballou was the best cover guy we had. So if he can become that lockdown guy, and if Geno has to move back to corner, I think Landon Collins is going to become your star.
That could be. That's just
my guess. Because we've seen Vinny. And Vinny didn't work. And we've seen Nick Perry. And Nick Perry didn't work. Maybe they tried Jarrett Williams, but maybe you tried Jarrett Williams because he's got experience, but I think Landon Collins is going to be the guy.
Well, and I think that's fair, because I do think that if I were to try to find the biggest gaffe, you know, coaching gaffe, you know, there's a couple play calls, but play calls, you know, that's not fair. If you were to look at a roster management gaffe, the biggest gaffe that I would point to is not finding that third corner until after we lose to
Texas A&M. Absolutely.
And so, you know, yes. And that's where Geno, that's where I point to Geno. That's why I emphasize Geno played every snap at star after that game.
Yes. Well,
what if he had started
in summer ball,
Florida Atlantic?
Yes.
You know, and say, this team can't beat us. Go play star all day.
Now, real quick, I got to point that out, okay? Because the average guy listening to this show did not catch that, okay? The fact that Geno Smith started playing at the Star after that ball game is exactly the point. That is the point that the coaches said, son of a gun, we missed that.
We got burned. We gambled and we got burned.
Yes. I wanted to touch on that for a second because the average fan did not see that Geno Smith started playing that position play after play after play after that loss.
Right. Right.
What about HaHa? Do you think that HaHa, what about the pub you're hearing about HaHa at safety?
Look, here's what I'll say about HaHa. And this will sound jerky, right? HaHa is a phenomenal player. When I look at stills of him, I get it. You know, I see his performance. I understand how he's performed for us in the past. I look at him and he just looks athletic. He looks athletically superior. He's performed athletically superior. But he's being called the best safety in college football.
Too much.
I can't say that. And so here's what I wonder. And if you're a longtime listener to our podcast, you'll get this. Is he going to have Marcell Dareus disease?
It's a good point.
Because Marcell Dareus made his living on one play in the national championship. Coach Saban, you know, in the next preseason, you know, said, "Hey, I remember when you used to be fast. You know, I remember when, you know," and he had his most success that 2010 season at nose guard. And he after did being not, an All-American end.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. That speaks to someone not being ready to play. And so I'm not just going to outright say that I expect this from HaHa. I just think, dude, God, there's enough similarities to make it an interesting question. Dude got a lot of pub from that pick against Notre Dame.
He did. But I will say, as we talk about the light coming on and learning the schemes, I think the light came on for him a few weeks before that. And I think the light came on for him in the LSU game before that.
Right.
And so for a HaHa, that, I mean, he came out in 2011 as the number one safety in the country at his position.
Yes.
And so for those fans, just to remember, when we signed that class, we had 3 5 stars. We had D. Hart. We had Clinton Dix, who both played at the same high school. And we had Cyrus Quanjo. Those were the 3 5-star guys that came out of that class. And so I think he is finally living up to his billing. I think he is going to shine. I think he's going to have a great year. He finally got the range. What happened was, is at the beginning of the season last year, he was misjudging balls.
Yep.
And he wasn't in the right position. And so the ball would just barely go over his fingertips. He wouldn't make the pick. And he'd be like, well, what happened? And he finally got it at the LSU game. And so I just wanted to bring up real quick, do I think he's the best safety in college football? No, I don't. Do I think he's going to be phenomenal and get better week after week after week? Yes. Do I look forward to seeing him in the SEC championship game? Yeah, because I think he's going to be a different player and we're not going to recognize him.
Look, I love the point counterpoint that we just both put out there because I think they're both valid. I agree more with you than I agree with me, but I think my point is still valid.
It is
getting too much. And this is something that Saban talks about, all the distractions, all of the noise, all of this, all the clutter, a guy being called the number one safety in college football before he really is that clutter. And so if he can discard the clutter, if he can demonstrate leadership and not let that impact him in the way that Marcell let it impact him, then he will grasp the ring, right? He'll grasp the ring in the way that you're suggesting.
Oh, absolutely.
So I agree with you more than I agree with me, but I think that I don't disagree with what I'm saying, though. I think there's still a cautionary tale there.
Oh, there is. And a funny, you know, just another example of the rich getting richer, right, is let's just quickly transition to Landon Collins. Because what was Landon Collins?
Can I ask you just a real quick question on free safety?
Sure.
Because I like that I track the DBs, and I like that, you know, kind of, you know, breaking it up. I don't know them nearly as well as I should, but as we're talking through something, and you know, and I like what you're saying about HaHa, and it may be taking him some time, and so I agree with that. And so, just is a question, and I don't know the answer, but I wonder, because we have a boundary corner and we have a field corner, and then we have the star and we have the money, and those are sort of roles that can be carved and sort of, you know, we can put a true freshman at star and just say, just do these three things, or just do this limited number of things that's on your plate. And it's kind of the strong safety is more of a, you know, close to the line of scrimmage. And so I just wonder if free safety is the position that has the most, you know, cornerback is like, look, cover their best guy, stay on him. And it becomes a one-on-one opportunity. You can either do it or you can't. And so I wonder if in just the nature of the defensive backfield and so, you know, sort of the ebb and flow of the defense, I wonder if the free safety isn't one of the more complex positions.
I think the free safety is second behind star as the most important position.
I hear what you're saying.
But is it
the most complex? Because the star is out there when we're in nickel, and the star does a couple of things, and we can hybrid off the star. The star can do 12 different things, but if you can do these three things, you can play the star. But the free safety is out there. The free safety is always out there. We always have a free safety. And so I wonder if the free safety is, look, you have to know all 12 things or you can't play. You can't know three of the 12 and play free safety in the same way that you can know three of the 12 and play star. I'm just asking the question because I don't know.
That's a fair question. That is a fair question, because I do believe that the free safety is the one that is calling the defense. And so when Will Lowry came on the scene and was able to play like he did behind Robert Lester, it's because he was the one that could make the calls. And I don't think HaHa was ready to make the calls at the beginning of the year.
Right.
And so I think what happened at the beginning of the year is they were trying to put Vinny in the back to make the calls.
Right.
And then they were having problems.
Yep. Yep.
So they had to, you know, him and HaHa had to flip.
Yep.
Well, then HaHa wasn't ready to do that, right? Robert Lester could do that. Will Lowry could help out.
Yep.
But now they're gone. And so.
And they weren't true free safety types anyways. I mean, free safety types.
No.
Even not so much Will Lowry, but, you know, even Nick Perry's, you know, 215. I mean, he's a big, you know, he's a big guy, for, you know, for a defensive back.
No, I think HaHa, if he does what I think he will do, he will be the best. He has the ability, okay, because he's just a junior. He has the ability to make the biggest impact that we've had at that position in quite a while.
Yes.
And, you know, we call it how we see it, and if we see it the way we see it, and if we're not the most, you know, in-depth experts and insiders and stuff like that. But we try to be fair and we try to be honest. And what you're saying is along the lines with kind of the theme of what we've carried through is we've had our run, right? We should be done with our run. But all of a sudden, do we have the best free safety at that position that we've had since Saban's been here?
No, that's true.
And how many, you know, and it's a rhetorical question, but we've said that about more than one position.
No, we have said that at more than one position. And, you know, I want to transition this to Landon Collins, because Landon Collins was not the number one safety at his position out of high school. He was just the number two safety, but he was also a five-star.
Slacker.
He was also a five-star, and I'm really, really excited to see what this kid does this year.
Now, Landon Collins – and then, you know, Derrick Henry, and we talked about him at running back, you know, 2 years in a row at ESPN and Nike, you know, does the thing they call the opening, and they bring, you know, hundreds of high school, you know, highly rated athletes. And, you know, they do this whole thing, and it's a TV show and all of the stuff. One of the things they do, and it kind of segues into the Elite 11 quarterbacks, and it's this really cool thing. One of the things they do is this like this fitness challenge. And I don't know all that's into it, you know, but bench press and 40 times and verticals, and it's like a dozen different things. And they calibrate an individual's performance at each of those activities based on their height and weight. So a defensive lineman has a chance to win. You know, an offensive lineman has a chance to win. You know, just because they're 300 pounds doesn't mean, you know, they're never going to be able to run as fast as a defensive back or jump as high, but they're stronger. And so they calibrate each of the exercises to sort of standardize for, you know, height and weight and position and stuff like that. 2 years ago, or maybe it was 3 years ago now, Landon Collins won it as the most athletic player at that event. And then the year after that, Derrick Henry won it as the most athletic player at that event. I don't know who won it last year and, you know, whatever. And we'll see how that translates to the field. That's pretty darn impressive.
No, it is absolutely impressive. And I'd be happy for, you know, us to have one person on our team that's had that recognition, much less two. Hey, what do you think about Vinny? What do you see Vinny's role in this defense this year?
That's the hardest thing to crack. Landon Collins has gotten some run at the money position. That's the 6 DB. We made a point last year of kind of tracking. I'm going a long way around. We made a point last year of tracking, you know, Nick Perry was the starter at dime. And we questioned that at one point, like, really, is he the guy? Because, you know, we don't know. And so sure enough, next week, you know, we watched it. And so we talked about it in the podcast. It was, you know, it's documented, right? It's out there. And so Landon Collins is getting some run at the dime. And so you think, well, is that backup or is that going to be a starter position? I don't know. We'll see. I think he has the opportunity to beat Nick Perry. And we've talked, you know, long and hard about Nick Perry. Your question was about Vinny. And the best answer I have for Vinny is, I don't know where he gets his snaps. When you talk about Geno at the star and Landon at the money and Landon at the strong safety and Haha at the free safety, and so we've talked in the past. Well, does Vinny become a spur linebacker? And we talk about all the guys we have at linebacker and all the talent and strength we have there. And I can honestly say, I don't know where he gets his reps, but I can also honestly say he will find the field. He's the kind of guy you can't keep off the field. I just don't know where he gets his reps. And so I know that's not a good answer. It's just the best I've got. For, you know, special teams, I'm not counting that.
The dude is too much of a playmaker. You know, just referencing your viewing guide. Okay, I think he's going to be your starting strong safety. So I guess what I'll say is that he's the kind of guy that is always around the ball.
Can I just pause you there?
Sure.
Because I want to, and I'm not disagreeing with you, because the dude's going to see the field. You can't keep him off the field.
And, no, you can't.
But when you say he's the starting, I want to make sure that I'm understanding, that everyone's understanding what you're saying. If he's the starting strong safety, okay, look, I can nod up and down, and I can agree with that. Hell yeah, he is, because he's going to play, because you can't keep him off the field. We put him in a position he was not athletically suited to play last year because you can't keep him off the field, right? I mean, we Correct. Put him in a cornerback position, for heaven's sake. That's Correct. A position he can't play. You know he can't play it, but you can't Right. keep him off the field, so put him there. And so, yes, he's going to play. So when you say put him at strong safety, we Geno Nickel, we talked about, you know, Fulton and Ballou, and then we talked about Haha on the back end. And so the guy he's playing in front of is Landon Collins.
Yes.
You
yes.
get that. Okay.
What I see happening, okay, in referencing your scheme here and your schematic, is I think John Fulton is going to be able to play the other corner. Deion will be your field guy. John Fulton will be your boundary guy. Geno will be your star, and he will be comfortable at the star. If Geno falters at the star, then Landon Collins will see the field through the star, in my opinion. Otherwise, Landon Collins will see the field in the dime situation. So what I'd love to happen is Vinny be your strong safety, Vinny being playing close up to the line of scrimmage like Mark Barron did, Haha being your center field, and Geno's your star, and Landon comes in the dime, or he comes in to the star as needed. I'd love Landon to be the guy that works in at the star So when Deion Ballou and John Fulton are gone and Geno moves out, Landon Collins can move into that star position.
Can I just ask you a question?
Sure.
Do we have too many good players?
We do. It's a good problem to have. It's an absolute good problem to have. But right now, what really makes this go is Vinny. Because all these other guys are talented, right? But Vinny was a freaking white boy linebacker. And you just can't get... I don't love the guy. You do. But you know what I can't deny? Is he's always around the freaking ball. He's always intercepting the ball, and he's always picking up a damn fumble, and he makes me scratch my head. It's like, how do you do that? How do you do that in the back of the defense? You're a white boy. He just does it. And he's going to keep doing it.
Yep.
And so having him in the mix with all these other guys, oh my gosh, it's so great to have him part of the team.
I can see, I can envision, you know, kind of the conversation in the headset where we're playing a team and they have started to mount a drive and they're moving the ball down the field and the coaches are just scratching their head frustrated. And Saban just gets in the headset and says, would you just put Vinny out there somewhere?
Sure.
You know?
Absolutely.
You know, we need somebody to make a play. It's like basketball when people are standing around waiting for someone else to make a play. Well, then put the guy out there that's going to make a play.
Vinny's that guy. Vinny is that guy.
And so it's going to be incredibly fun to watch. Look, I'll say this about the DBs. And I will be as passionate and as emphatic about this. One of the key things to watch, and if you're really paying attention and you really want to kind of see what's kind of around the corner for Alabama, is watch the cornerback substitution. We have signed four cornerbacks: Anthony Averett, Jonathan Cook, Eddie Jackson, Maurice Smith. Honestly, can't tell you which one, you know, necessarily is going to get, you know, the first crack at having an opportunity. But the future of the cornerback position and the star position is on the roster. And so watch to see who gets some run when we bring out a John Fulton, when we bring out a Deion. When the game is over, now you could always say, well, the second team guy is always going to, you know, have it. Yeah, but it's more than that. Who gets the most opportunity? Who's the guy that's first in, last out? Who's the guy, like a Geno last year, that when we decided we were going to commit to this guy, played the whole game? He was out there with third-teamers last year. And so who's the guy that comes in, you know, maybe as the second-teamers start to come in, but plays through the third- and fourth-teamers also being in there? Comes in for a few snaps and then goes and sits down, but comes in and plays the duration.
Oh, I agree with that. And just like we said, you know, for LaMichael Fanning, right? It's time for your light to come on. Well, if you're Brad Silvey and you're Cyrus Jones, it's time for your light to come on, because you were recruited as a wide receiver. You have been moved over, your sophomores, and you've been moved over to cornerback. And if you're going to get it done, now's the time to do it.
Here's something also to watch. Watch, and I'm not predicting this. I'm just saying literally this is something I want to watch. Cyrus Jones, and I went to look at, well, gosh, I'm trying to find three corners, and so maybe we think we found them. But gosh, we've got a bunch of young corners. And I start looking at corner at safeties, and I say, well, we've got a lot of safeties, but a lot of them are upperclassmen. And so at corner, you know, Ballou and Fulton are gone next year. And so we definitely need to see which of these young guys rotate in at the corner position. At safety, we lose Ha-Ha. And we've talked about
probably
will lose him. And so we've talked about the criticality of that position. And so I started looking at, maybe I'm overlooking at the corners. I need to think about the safety position. And so I look at all these freshman corners, and they're all 170, 175, 180. I look at Cyrus Jones, and he's 196. And I think, well, maybe he's the candidate for free safety. And so maybe Cyrus Jones is the first one to play corner off the bench. But then when we start bringing in the young guys to get their reps at corner, maybe he moves to free safety.
Well, I will just say real quick, because obviously we could talk about the DB category for another 24 hours, is in the A-Day game, when he's only been over there for a few weeks, right? And he was at corner. In the first touchdown that was thrown in that A-Day game to Kenny Bell on a go route or on a post pattern, Cyrus Jones literally was out of the play to start with.
Oh, yeah.
He quickly made up 15 yards of ground and was in a position in the end zone to intercept the ball and just got turned around.
Yep.
So my point is, on that play, he was the one this year that flashed for me that, wow, did you see what he just did?
And he was effectively in that role, catching up and covering for someone else.
Yes.
Look, he was at a corner position. But what he did was a free safety activity.
Correct. Correct. Actually, he was on the corner on the other side and was trying to cover the guy that had beaten the guy in the slot. That is correct. So he was actually trying to...
You never really see a corner come over and help out because... You know, because of the coverage that they're doing. It's just, you know, he just responded that way. You typically see a free safety do that. And so, you know, I don't know. That's just anecdotal. But I start to wonder, well, who's going to be the next guy at safety? And maybe, I don't know. Maybe
you're right. Because you got Nick Perry, you got Jarrett Williams. You know, those guys are, you know, and another guy we'll just throw out a name of, you know, is John Miller, right? I just think he's a fun story. I mean, he was a big recruit, played baseball, signed with Stanford, wish he would have, you know, or signed with Stanford, went on to play baseball, and here he is coming back. I haven't heard anything about him, but, you know, I look forward to seeing him getting out on the field.
Yeah, so. I do too. All of those guys are special team and strong safety types. You know, Jabril Wilson is an opportunity to get some run at the corner. I don't see him at free safety or even, you know, star or money. Opportunity. So the one that has the most opportunity to kind of segue into a free safety, I think, is Cyrus. And so that'll be interesting to watch. And if he comes in early and then moves over and some of these freshmen come over, what you're getting is sort of a vision, you know, a sneak look at the secondary next year.
Oh, absolutely. Hey, give me your breakout player. I'm going to let you go first this time.
Oh, I'm going to hit you up on the concern position, and then I'll hit this first. My biggest concern position is the corner opposite Deion. And, you know, corner position is an island position. If you get turned around, it's the fight song the other way. And so my biggest concern is finding that corner position. What's your biggest concern on defense?
Until this question mark gets solved, it's got to be nose guard.
Okay.
Because I can only say what I want Robinson to do, but he's a true freshman, and Brandon Ivory is the guy, and Brandon Ivory currently has not shown me he can be the guy, and what I saw in the SEC championship game concerns me. Granted, he was a little banged up, but, you know, our ability to stop the run up the middle, as with most defenses, is crucial. And so that's where it all starts for me.
I think we have our bases covered, right? Because the cornerback position really speaks to who can play that position to free up Geno to play the star. And you mentioned nose guard. And those are the two linchpin positions of our defense. You know, if you want to say the third, then, you know, is, you know, there's 11 positions. So you could go 1 through 11. If you want to, I think it's star first and then nose, and then maybe it's free safety. But, you know, we've talked about two of what I think are the top two linchpin positions, the nose. You know, let's keep their linebackers clean so that they can cut off running lanes. And then the star, which I think allows us to be the most versatile in our coverage position. So those are those are pivotal positions, key positions in a Saban defense. So I like that we have both of those bases covered. Who are your breakout players, one or multiple, on the defense?
Mine's going to be – well, I guess I'll have two. First, it's going to be Denzel Duvall. I think he's just going to, you know, he's going to do like Pagan did last year for me. Denzel Duvall is just going to be, you know.
Is he a fair as a breakout player? Because he, you know.
He's not really fair, but I just wanted to give some nod here because it's going to be eight snaps to start, then 10 snaps. And we talked about, you know, not to go over this again, how he gets into the game with Dixon and Hubbard. And then the other guy is Dalvin Tomlinson for me. He is the most excited guy. I mean, Robinson comes in with the pub, right? Well, Dalvin Tomlinson, as everybody knows, he got hurt. He did not get to play last year. He's chomping at the bit. He looks the part. And I'm excited to see him flash at defensive end is where I think he's going to land.
Okay.
Who's your guy?
I'm not as crystal on this as I was for the offense. You know, I could make a case for Adrian Hubbard being the breakout player. I mean, if he goes to 14, 15 sacks, then that's pretty darn breakout.
That can't count as breakout, man. If I can't count Duvall, you can't count Hubbard.
You know, Reuben Foster, if he comes on, I think, you know, I think he would be someone that, you know, kind of everyone would pick. I think A'shaun Robinson has an opportunity. I'm not, you know, he's not going to come in and have a Cody-like impact, which that would be just insane. But if he can come in and have a Josh Chapman impact,
that would be pretty darn
impressive.
Sure.
So as a true freshman, so I think someone like an A'shaun Robinson, he's not going to do it week one, you know, because his the position, and so it'll kind of build over time. But I think A'shaun Robinson's the guy. You know, I mentioned Reuben Foster and Hubbard. I'm kind of serious about Hubbard. I mean, if he comes out and doubles the sack total, then that's kind of a breakout. Landon Collins is an opportunity. You know, that's someone everyone's kind of looking for. You know, so I do want to pick someone that, you know, maybe not everyone's looking for. And I think A'shaun Robinson.
Okay. Well, that sounds good, man. I've enjoyed it, and I'll be looking forward to talking some more football here shortly.
Absolutely. This is the Alabama Football Podcast. I want to put it back out there like we did in the first show. If you'd like to win two free tickets to the Virginia Tech football game, these are good Tide Pride seats. They're part of my Tide Pride membership. I just have two extras. Download a copy of the Alabama Football Preseason Viewing Guide. You can do that at alabamafootballpodcast.com. It's the best preseason guide that you're going to find on the market for Alabama football. And I just need to have enough paid downloads of the guide. So you have to pay for the download. It's a name your own price. You have to pay for the download. And I have to have enough downloads to pay to just cover the cost of my tickets. So if I break even my tickets, I'm giving them away. So go download the guide. Throw $5 towards it. Have an opportunity to not only read the best preseason guide on the market, but also a chance to win two Virginia Tech football tickets, you know, for the opening game. Have an opportunity to shake Tommy's hand before the game, which is just that in and of itself is priceless. But it's a 45-page guide of truly meaty content available for immediate download at alabamafootballpodcast.com. With that, this has been the Alabama Football Podcast. We enjoy and appreciate you listening. Roll Tide. Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a Roll Tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach?
Aye.
Of course. Roll Tide.